I guess some in Mexico, some in the United States, right? Yeah. Are owned by cartels. And they just use it to shuttle people across the border.
Yeah, I'm telling you, these guys are making corporate decisions.
Yeah.
they have expansion plans. They have, you know, sure. Their underlings represent, you know, what their strategies are and how right. they can improve profit. You know what? They do shakedowns too, right? It's like they'll charge somebody. You know, these are the stories that we hear. Mm-hmm. They'll charge somebody $5,000 or $10,000, you know, to get them to the border. But once they're at the border, they'll call family members and say, "Hey, we got you. You know, you got your family member here. But you know, we can't cross them over because there's been issues, and we need another $5,000. Otherwise, we're going to send them all the way back." Yeah. 30 days of trekking, you know, through transmodal transportation, you know, they're either taxis and trains and boats and whatever, and they're at the border, but we're going to send them back.
Right.
Oh my God, don't do that. You know, so why do I have to pay?
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
All right, welcome to another episode of American Potential. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about border security, immigration and border security. Last year, we had a guest on the podcast who lives in a border city, and we talked to him about border security and what he was seeing daily when it came to this issue. Well, we wanted to have him back on to talk about what he's been seeing over the past year, since there's been 2.5 million people that crossed the southern border in 2023. Just to put that number into perspective, 2.5 million is the size of America's second or third largest cities of Los Angeles and Chicago. So how did we get to this point? And what are some of the solutions that need to be implemented? I want to welcome back my friend, Daniel Garza, who is the president of Libre. Daniel, thanks for being with us.
Jeff, what a pleasure to be back with you.
Yeah, you. Awesome. Well, people know you from, I mean, if they watch any kind of TV at all, you're like a big celebrity, man. It's
thank
like,
you so
yeah,
much, I've,
yeah, it's big celebrity. Yeah.
I mean, well, look at you though, man.
Oh,
big,
yeah,
big
right.
Big show off.
Yeah. Big show off.
Your own podcast, you know, name on the branding.
Well, it's woo. Tiny though. Did you see it's tiny?
I did yeah. see that.
Okay, great. Good. Show I made sure it was tiny.
Show some humility.
There you go. That's right. All right. So we talked to you last year yeah. about border security. You live in outside of McAllen, Texas, right?
I live right in the heart of the Rio Grande Valley,
yeah.
Mission, Texas, which is adjoining right next to McAllen. So yeah, it's right on literally a quarter mile from the border of Anzaldúa's Bridge.
So last time I talked to you, I had never been to McAllen, Texas. Yeah. And then I since have gone to McAllen yeah. on a border trip.
Hope you liked it.
It's a beautiful area. So it's yeah. a wonderful area. It's incredible to see what these disastrous policies of the Biden administration yeah, have sure. done to the community. And the president and his administration don't seem to care about the impact on communities along the border.
They seem indifferent. You know, also with Mayorkas, you know, also seems indifferent.
Yeah.
I have five nephews who are actually border agents. Mm-hmm. They work for the U.S. Border Patrol. And they kind of fill me in on the kind of things that they see. And one of the things that Mayorkas is doing is, you know, giving them a ton of time off because he knows troop morale is at its lowest it's ever been. And this is, you know, kind of one of the ways that yeah. he tries to make up for it. But it has changed the Rio Grande Valley in a very real way. And we kind of feel left alone, you know, other than what Governor Abbott is doing. And sure, you know, to some people they may seem like extreme measures, but you're forcing the hands of a lot of governors across the country yeah. now, you know, to take these kind of measures or to do what really the federal government has failed to yeah. do, which is secure the borders. I think this is the first president that has made our borders unsecure.
Yeah. Well, a governor is charged with protecting the citizens of their state, right? He's not charged with protecting the border, but if the president of the United States is not going to do it, what other choice really does a governor
like
have?
Like I said, it forces yeah. your hand, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, you said 2.5 million. Those are the ones we know of. Those are encounters.
True.
There's other folks, you know, that are up to nefarious things, even more nefarious than just, you know, entering without prior authorization. Criminal activity.
Right.
That is happening, that is not being intercepted or caught. You know, we know for a fact that 176 people on the terror watch list were intercepted. How many got through?
Right.
You know, that were not intercepted. We know that I think the number is now 600 known gang members from MS-13 at high command were intercepted. How many weren't?
Right.
And so, you know, it's these kind of things that scare the heck out of you. You know, it's not just, you know, the folks that are coming over to work hard and contribute, you know, in ways and make their life better. Really, it's about, you know, those folks that are coming to exploit I honestly feel do damage to America. Sure. Or Americans.
Yeah. So looking at, and I was stunned when I went down there. I met with the Border Patrol agents. They gave us briefings. They were very clear that, like, they don't get involved in politics, but it seems to me they say, look, we're for a wall. We're for drones. We're for technology. We're for all those things, right? Now, you know, they'll tell you there's some places you can't build the wall, but there's other places you can, but it's helpful. They'll tell you that. But what they say we don't have is the political will to do this. Like, we can do it. We have done it where we control our borders. We've done it before. We just don't have the political will today.
Yeah.
Agree with that?
Yeah, no, I well, that political will, that lack of political will is mostly you'll find in the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating as hell. Look, I mean, he is the one who, of course, stopped the Remain in Mexico program.
Right.
The agreements that they had on asylum with the, you know, other countries where they could actually provide humanitarian aid and other resources to people in their country of origin. Mm-hmm. Before they made the trek. And then, of course, the catch and release program was created under Biden. And then, of course, the expansion of the parole program. All this, of course, sends the message to folks around the world that our border is open. You
right.
Just make it here. Turn yourself into a border agent, you know, at a processing center. You know, and our agents have been turned into really like glorified secretaries. Where they just,
yeah, they're processing.
They take
agents,
their fake yeah. names, and then, of course, they send, you know, fly them to their city of choice. You know, it's insane what is happening.
Yeah.
And he is the one who created the catch and release program and the parole program of certain countries. And so, you know, for him to now try to make the case that he's, you know, strong on border, it's just utter nonsense.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it.
Right.
But just, you know, with their eyes wide open, I think yeah. people are seeing what's happening.
Yeah. One of the things that really struck me when I was down in McAllen was the you know, and you see people who come here, they're being told that they can come. So they make this trek of 1,000 miles in some cases or whatever to come. There's young girls being raped. They're being kidnapped. They're being, you know, put into child trafficking and sex rings and everything else. It's horrific.
Horrible.
All because of the Biden administration giving this clarion call that, oh, if you come, we'll just let you in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he has empowered the cartels in a very real way.
Right.
And then, of course, on the other side of the border, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, also known as AMLO, has wink, wink, nod, nod agreements with the cartel. You know, you don't touch the taxpayers and we don't mess with you. And so basically, in a sense, has ceded the border regions to the cartels. And I have to cross the border at least once a month to go see my parents on the other side of the border, about an hour into the border. And, you know, let me tell you, it is a dangerous trip to go see my parents every time. And when, you know, my parents come over as well, because the cartels control the entire region. Not only do they control it, like as almost a corporation, right? Where
right.
they have executives and they have transportation hubs and, you know, it's a hell of a system that they got there. But at the same time, they execute their own justice. They are judge and jury.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because I've seen it play out even in the little small hometown where my parents are from, which I won't name. But point is that they are the law of the land, and it's insane, you know. But of course, you know, we've caused this situation to worsen even because we're funding the cartels through this kind of welcoming of this situation where it's overwhelmed, obviously, our judicial system.
Right.
We have people who claim asylum and have no merit for it, but are given an order to come back, 10 years from now?
Right.
You see what we can do for you?
Sure.
Meanwhile, you know, that we're worsening this sort of two-tiered society, Jeff, where we have millions. I think it's like 7.5 million people added to the 15 million that were here before Joe Biden, who are now undocumented across America, who have to live in the shadows, who are... you know, restricted from certain jobs or certain opportunities, who are easily exploitable. In some homes, you have half folks who are, you know, born in America, and the others are not. And so it's this weird kind of citizens and non-citizens living together in some homes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have the upper tier of citizens who enjoy full benefits of citizenship. Right. That is not a desirable situation. You know, when you're talking about 350 million Americans and 20 to 25 million folks, you know, who live in fear of being deported, or the laws changing, or something happening where they're arrested and boom, they're gone. You know, it's just a horrible situation to live in, and it's being worsened by this administration.
And I won't say the worst part of it, because there's a lot of bad to it. But one additional point I think that needs to be brought up is that all the while that's happening, the law-abiding citizen, the law-abiding person who wants to come to the United States is stuck in a system that's just never going to get them here. It's just so broken.
Even more so now, because, of course, this situation has, I think, made any kind of reform impossible. You have now, I understand, 150,000 folks who have been bussed or have flown into New York City, for example. Mm-hmm. 70,000 of which are given shelter because of the right to shelter laws. Sure. in New York, and this costing them billions of dollars now, the New York state taxpayers, which of course they want the federal government to front now.
Right.
and of course, so it's overwhelmed a lot of, you know, the resources and the institutions in places like New York, which are far away from the border.
Right.
But you know, also you're seeing that in Illinois, you're seeing that in Florida, and you're seeing just across the country, Colorado even, you know,
yeah,
your home
sure.
state, you know, you, right. you're seeing this. And so, you know, what's happened is, in a very real way, if we wanted to reform the asylum laws so it's not being gamed like it is now, well, there's this intractability now within the parties, and it's made almost impossible because, of course, Republicans have sort of dug their heels in and said, no, we need to get to border security before we do anything else. And the other side is, no, we need to amplify legal channels, and that's how we're going to solve this problem. And that's where we're stuck. And nobody moves, right? But
right.
In the middle of all this inaction, the situation gets just worse, right? Mm-hmm. The status quo is not acceptable, but yet we're having to tolerate it because of intractability of for partisan reasons.
Right.
It's frustrating.
Although when you look at it, I mean, I think that Joe Biden, President Biden, coming out and saying, you know, claiming he's for border security, though he spent all of his time avoiding border security.
Election time.
Yeah, right, it's election time. But that's a tacit admission that the American people want border security. And without it, there's no deal, there's no... This has got to be the number one issue in America right now, right?
Yeah, no, and New Hampshire showed that, right? You know, yeah. I think from the exit polling showed that the situation that is out of control.
Yeah.
You know, what's fascinating is for a lot of Latinos, like, you know, in my community, we talk, this is also a big issue, especially
right.
in the Rio Grande Valley. They don't like the sort of loss of control and order at our borders.
Right.
And it's starting to reflect in some of the election outcomes. You know, this is 85% in Congressional District 15 in South Texas. You know, Monica de la Cruz won in 2022. I only mention that because that's the first time a Republican has taken that district in 150 years since Teddy Roosevelt was
right.
president.
Right.
And a lot of that had to do with the anger that they're feeling over the border crisis.
Right.
And this administration's inaction, ineptitude almost, that they've shown on this whole issue, and it's making them less safe. They have 35,000 people that they intercepted who had criminal convictions. So come on. I mean, how is that good for our society?
Yeah.
You know, if we're not vetting these folks and...
Right. And your neighbors, you know, regardless of what, you know, what their ethnic background is, your neighbors are bearing the brunt of those criminals, those folks that are sneaking across and have a criminal background, right?
So yeah, we're the front lines. Obviously, you know, we're the tip of the spear, you know, when it comes to this stuff. And so, you know, we see everything first, right? And then they, you know, of course, they get lost into America, never to, you know, rear their heads again. And I think that's part of the frustration, is that everybody knows that the system is being gamed.
Right.
Everybody knows that as they're being released into... One of my nephews tells me that they have sent over 35 people to one address in New York City. Do 35 people live in one city? No, it's a transportation hub for the cartels. You know, this is like, you know, that's what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet, you know, they do it anyways, right? And so the FBI is more busy tracking down, devout Catholics, you know, who show up to church,
right,
you know, because they have, you know, the wrong ideological stances or something.
Yeah.
And they're busier arresting, you know, pro-life demonstrators.
Right.
Than what's happening at our border. It's just frustrating.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah,
it is. So many Americans.
Yeah. So many Americans frustrated by it. One of the things I was really struck by when I went down to McAllen was, I mean, you talked about the cartels controlling the border.
Yes.
And several folks were telling me, they were showing me places where they're literally, they buy the land, right? They literally will go in and buy the piece of property. I guess some in Mexico, some in the United States, right? Yeah. Are owned by cartels. And they just use it to shuttle people across the border.
Yeah, I'm telling you, these guys are making corporate decisions.
Yeah.
they have expansion plans. They have, you know,
sure.
Their underlings present, you know, what their strategies are and how they can improve profit. They do shakedowns too, right? It's like they'll charge somebody. These are the stories that we hear.
Mm-hmm.
They'll charge somebody $5,000 or $10,000, you know, to get them to the border. But once they're at the border, they'll call family members and say, "Hey, we got your family member here. But you know, we can't cross them over because there's been issues and we need another $5,000. Otherwise, we're going to send them all the way back." Yeah. 30 days of trekking, you know, through transmodal transportation, you know, they're either taxis and trains and boats and whatever, and they're at the border, but we're going to send them back.
Right.
Oh my God, don't do that. You know, so why do I have to pay? And of course, that's where they checked them down for more.
Right.
It's all these strategies and tactics that they use, you know, to thousands of people. I understand Petro has changed his visa programs so that no longer are visas required for people in certain countries from Africa, certain states, you know, the countries. So they'll fly over, no visa, and then pay the $10,000 to, you know, the cartel members that are connected to Mexico. And that's how now they're funneling people in from Africa.
Yeah.
Because they've lowered the restrictions of visa requirements. And so even the country's leaders in South America are gaming the system, and they're laughing at us.
Right.
It's not a serious situation what's happening at the border, and this administration continues the ineptitude. And if you put Mayorkas in front of congressmen or senators, he will answer with straight up lies about what is happening at the border, and that, you know, just frustrates you to no end.
Yeah. Yeah. It is very frustrating, and I feel for these. For many people, I mean, they are being exploited, not just by these cartels, but by our own government, our own, our own invitation. Just come.
They're
it'll be
along
fine.
With it. It's almost like they're welcoming it.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, they don't want to end the cash and release program. Biden, you know, he's tweeting out there that, you know, he has these this new border plan and let's get behind it and we can, you know, get more border agents and restrict, you know, of course, entry of the flow. You mean you can do it?
Yeah, right.
Oh, you've been able to do it this whole time.
Yeah, right.
You're just waiting for what?
An election.
Exactly. So it's just, meanwhile, like I said, we're worsening in our two-tiered society. People's lives, you know, I think are thrown into flux, especially their children. You know, who now are born into America and legalized, but their parents are in limbo, which, of course, forces the hand of Congress to try to pass some kind of immigration reform. But it is made impossible because, of course, the flow continues.
Right.
Bottom line is, you know, this administration could mitigate the situation through executive actions, but they refuse to do so.
Yeah.
And they play coy about it.
So what do they have to do? Just the administrative action, the asylum claim and
look,
other things?
They can make agreements with the Central American countries,
right,
you know, to process asylum claims, you know, at their countries of origin. They can end the cash and release and have them remain in Mexico until they're approved.
Mm-hmm.
They can pass legislation like the Border Protection Act. What that plan does, and this was a bipartisan bill. It was John Cornyn, along with Kyrsten Sinema.
Mm-hmm.
Who recognized the problem, and they said, look, our system, our judicial system is overwhelmed at the, along the borders. Mm-hmm. Let's create 4 new courts. Let's hire 400 new judges, along with, you know, the prosecutors and the caseworkers that would go along with that. And then add, of course, you know, the border agents to along the border as well. What this would do, of course, would accelerate the process of adjudicating these cases and letting somebody know right away with their due process of whether they qualify for asylum or not, given the circumstances that they present.
Right.
Or not.
Right.
And if you don't, then you're deported. Right. If you do, then you're given, of course, asylum in America. But this obscene, almost farcical situation where we are cashing and releasing people into the country, and it doesn't even matter what name they give. You know, if you want to name yourself Mickey Mouse, and that's what it is, and you go into the country and you wait 10 years, you know, to get. It's just. Anyways, there are things, of course, that yeah. can be done immediately to mitigate the flow of. And I'm talking about folks who do not have prior authorization to enter the country, and who come in and legally, of course, claim asylum, but have no merit to them. Mm-hmm. But they can't process them because our court system is overwhelmed, our federal court system.
Yeah.
So why not expand the federal court system?
Yeah. It's there is no rule of law. I mean, it's a breakdown of the rule of law, essentially. And, you know, I've always thought about our immigration system is, you know, you may not like a law, but if you don't like a law, you should change the law, right? You should make it a different law. But to simply ignore the law really does erode the rule of law. And once we erode the rule of law in America, we really don't have much left.
Ironically, it's one of the reasons why immigrants come to America is because of our sense of rule mm-hmm. of law,
right?
Where people are treated equal under the law. I mean, yeah. that's what it says in our Supreme Court building.
Yeah.
You know, where Moses is holding the Ten Commandments,
right.
the tablets, right under it says equal under the law.
Yeah.
Literally.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet, you know, that's exactly what we're eroding, right? And,
yeah.
and in a very real way, it is Americans that are getting hurt here. It's not, you know, of course, immigrants that are coming from these countries where they're being oppressed, where there's no economic opportunity, automatically just coming into America, their lives are made better almost.
Yeah.
I think one of the, you know, they talk about this ridiculous notion about white privilege, which, by the way, I reject because it dismisses, I think, the individual sacrifices and the hard work of people, you know, who work hard to position their children
sure.
for success, who pass on the wealth of generations onto the next generation, and they earned it, right?
Right.
And, but one of the privileges we have is just being in America, because this is the country where anybody from anywhere with nothing can achieve anything, right? And it I just, we've, I think, allowed people to fulfill more dreams in this country than any other country in ways never thought possible. You know, I think our prosperity and the innovation has been tremendous. Now, having said that, of course, that is the pool. It's the rule of law. It's the limited government. It's the prosperity that we have and the opportunity and equal under the law. It's a powerful magnet. So I'm kind of liking what's happening across South America now, where there's almost a change of mentalidad, you know, they say it in Spanish, on voters, because they're voting in people now like Milei in Argentina, Poa in Uruguay, center right, even Ecuador, you know, has changed, you know, their ideological leadership. And Bukele in El Salvador, it used to be the capital of homicides around the world, and he's brought it down to almost negligible. It's been an incredible transformation that we're seeing in El Salvador. And by bringing down crime and increasing productivity, which of course that of course increases the safety of people and the prosperity of people, and there's opportunity. And now, why leave El Salvador?
Right.
And I think that is going to resolve much more our immigration problem by increasing productivity in these countries through
sure.
you know, these sort of you know freedom-minded
right.
Policies than anything we can do here in our country.
Right. So I love on this show telling the story of people who came to the United States legally, because I think as Americans, we get accustomed to it. We get used to it. We get, you know, I always talk about freedom and liberty.
We are, right?
Yeah, it is. It's like health. When you're healthy, you don't ever think about it. But the minute you get that bad report from a doctor, you're like, oh my gosh, my health. Well, it's the same thing's true for freedom and liberty, right? We just take it for granted. But immigrants who come here and lived a life somewhere else, whether it was Russia or China or Mexico or wherever, they come here and they see how wonderful this country is and the liberties that we have. And so I love telling those stories. And your story is a great one, by the way. Take a minute to just kind of tell your story and your family story.
Well, and you're right about the arc of history, 250 years now in America. You know, we've brought in 1 million people every year. That's over 250 million immigrants that have come to America, right? And they came with aspirations, right? And they filled the need, a demand in our a free market system. And they, of course, through spontaneous order, created wealth for themselves and wealth for others, right? And have lifted America and shed their blood in foreign battlefields. We are a nation of immigrants, and they have made us stronger, right, as a country. And my parents saw America as the promised land, you know, where they could achieve what they could not achieve in their country of origin. And in a very real way, you know, these are two people with a fourth grade education, no high school diploma, no English, no driver's license, and yet they were able to, you know, work as farm workers in the Central Valley of California, move up to the Yakima Valley in the state of Washington, where I was raised. And then they took their, you know, savings that, you know, after working hard for many years and risked it on a small business. And we were on our way up, you know, the economic ladder and achieved the American dream. And my parents made life better for their children. And I went to go work for the President of the United States at the White House, you know, under George W. Bush. Now, imagine that, you know, it's like farm worker kid, the sticks, you know, working at the West Wing, you know, for the President of the United States. That's America. That's a testament to who we are, right? Again, anybody from anywhere with nothing can achieve anything. And look, those stories abound, right? You know, of people, you know, who did better for themselves and of course, created wealth for others and opportunity. We need to continue to be that country. And we need to be that magnet to other people. But we need a system that is orderly. Right. And because that's the only way we're going to, of course, preserve our rule of law. And people around the world will know that if you come to America, you're going to do it, you know, by getting in line. Right. And you have to merit, you know, also sometimes, you know, getting into America with your talents and your skills or whatever you can leverage here, because the people who came here did that before you. Right. And so I'm so proud of my parents for having made that decision.
Right.
And I'm so grateful to America, you know, for the opportunities that me and my siblings got.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great story. And I think there's so many stories like that. We've talked about Lily Wu, who, you know, rose, was born in China, moved to Guatemala with her parents and came to the United States and is now the mayor of Wichita, Kansas. I mean, it's, you know, it's just incredible stories of people who come and succeed, but that's America's story. That really is. So
very much America. And I think one of the greatest things, you know, that I think unites us are those shared values of the hard work ethic, individualism, our faith in God, you know, our love of this country and what it's done for us. Right. And I think one of the things that I find missing in this sort of new modern world is this lack of gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, to recognize that wherever you're at, you didn't get there by yourself. Somebody helped you get there.
Yeah.
Whether it was your parents, your teacher, you know, your uncles, you know, whoever, right? But people have opened doors for you. And you've gotten opportunities that maybe, you know, haven't come the way of other people. You know, you got the breaks that others didn't. I don't know why. You know, just because you got something doesn't mean you deserved it. Or just because you didn't get something doesn't mean you didn't deserve it.
Right.
You know, but here you are, right? And you're living a great life, and you should be grateful for that.
Right.
So sometimes it's just people just so resentful about, you know, made up stuff sometimes. Yeah. And anyways.
I think Joe Biden and many on the other side of the political spectrum, I guess, believe that Hispanics just, you know, vote for them. They're going to vote Democrat.
But they're wired left.
They're wired left. Are they wired? Are Hispanics wired left? I don't think they are.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Look, Jeff, I think the center right made massive mistakes in the past because of consultants or because of whatever reason they stayed away from minority communities. I think that, or they just assumed that these ideas would get to them, right? I think the center right, those who are freedom minded, have superior ideas to progressives, those on the center left. But if you don't communicate those ideas, If you don't explain the merits of those ideas and, you know, what have been the outcomes, you know, that are time proven, time tested. And the only ones that are coming around are folks, you know, from the progressive left, you know, center left organizations that are Latinos that pretend to be nonpartisan, but they're not. University professors that have that kind of sway, indoctrination over, you know, our kids, you know, and also in the Latino community.
Sure.
Hollywood, Spanish language television that was very center left. These are the folks that were controlling a one-sided conversation within the Latino community. Well, enough of that. That has stopped. That has changed now. We have changed the conversation. We are driving our ideas. We are engaging the Latino community to engage their fellow Latinos, women, people of faith, business leaders, youth, you know, all of them. We all have to be a part of this, right? You know, where we have to educate ourselves. You know, what are the policies that are going to generate prosperity and energy abundance and empower parents? And what are the kind of policies that are going to generate dependency, centralize more power and more money and more control in the hands of politicians, yeah, in Washington, D.C. Stay away from those ideas and those, you know, advocates, yeah, and embrace, you know, this agenda of freedom. That's what's made America strong, you know? And right. So I'm just so proud that the Latino community has responded to that message. And now they're active, you know, in our efforts as well. And it's made a massive difference.
You're a true believer, man. You're a true believer in freedom, liberty, free markets, limited government, federalism, all those things, right?
Absolutely. I honestly believe, obviously, in the principles, right? And which is why I fight so hard for them.
Sure.
And I do want to engage the Latino community around that. I also know that there are, especially in the Latino community, I think they are impacted disproportionately by certain barriers that maybe other fellow Americans are not. So, for example, 30% of us only speak Spanish. That's a major barrier to opportunity. 33% of us don't have a high school diploma, adults. In some states, 50% of us don't have a driver's license. My parents didn't have a driver's license, didn't have a high school diploma, and didn't speak English. Mm-hmm. If we could have accelerated the process and removed those barriers, they could have moved up that economic ladder faster.
Right.
And didn't have to work in the fields for so long like they did. So having learned those lessons, you know, and observing, you know, what my parents went through, we're out there trying to accelerate that process of removing these barriers. And once you expand opportunities for people by removing these barriers, then the free market becomes real to them, Jeff.
Right.
In a very real way. And they become champions of the free market system.
Yeah.
But if we don't help them remove these barriers, if they're stuck and don't have equal opportunity, if we don't redistribute knowledge and opportunity, then, of course, you breed resentment and division, and they buy into this oppressors and oppressed kind of narratives that the left is pushing. And of course, then we have a different society.
Yeah.
So I do believe strongly in the free market system, and it is the most powerful system in the world that can generate prosperity and productivity. But I also believe in giving a hand up.
Right.
Right. And in a very real way to remove these barriers so that people have equal opportunity.
Yeah. One final point on that. You talked about learning English.
Yes.
As I mean, if you just speak Spanish and you come to the United States, that's a barrier to your economic prosperity, which I would assume if I moved to Mexico and I didn't learn Spanish, I mean, it would be a barrier.
Disadvantaged.
I'd be very disadvantaged.
Very
right?
disadvantaged.
So do you think that some maybe on the big government side want people to not learn English because it keeps them dependent upon government?
God, I would hope not. I don't want to think that people actually have that mentality. You know, this sort of asinine virtue signaling kind of thing where, you know, oh no, keep your culture and your language and that's all you have to. When in a very practical sense, you are condemning them to continual disadvantage, right?
Right.
You know, we talk a lot about equal opportunity in America. But is there really equal opportunity if you have these barriers? You know, I don't believe that. But if we can remove these barriers, then obviously then everybody has an equal shot, right?
Right.
Some of the folks, you know, who advocate for bilingual education, this is the process where you bring somebody along slowly, teaching them English small portions, by the 12th grade, maybe they become proficient. When I came to America, when my parents came to America, and I was born in California, my parents were Spanish speaking, monolingual. Mm-hmm. They had a tough time because, they didn't know the language. When they put me into the first grade, that school was English immersion. Within 1 year, they had me speaking English and reading English, right? And because they sort of set me aside and then they put me back into the classroom. And it was this kind of back and forth. But it was to prepare me immediately, right? To be at an equal footing with my peers.
Yeah.
Had they not done that, I would have been, held back, really, right, in a very real way. So I would hope that the intent of these, let's just assume they're well-intentioned people, is to honor their culture and their language, are not successful. The people who come to America must learn English. It is the language of success and the language of business here.
Yeah. All right. Daniel, I appreciate you spending the time. I really appreciate all that you do. I mean, you're really doing great work through the Libre Initiative, certainly. And so thanks for all you do.
Thank you so much. This is principle-driven effort. And I'm so proud of that because in a very real way, I kind of feel the responsibility of modeling what should be proper advocacy of mm-hmm. policy.
Right.
I think too many people are teaching our young kids to confront lawmakers in the halls of Congress or occupy their offices, and it's counterproductive. And so I'm proud of the fact that our teams advocate, but they do it in a way that I think is productive and effective.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
You got it. All right. Well, always great to talk to Daniel Garza, hear his story, and his story is America's story. And we've just always got to remember that. Go out there, fight for liberty and freedom. As I said, it's worth defending. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.